Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday, February 14th, 2011. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone, especially the female listeners. It's not something I say to men. Welcome back. Lots been going on lately in the world, especially in the Middle East. Also, I'm looking forward to a call from a friend of mine who's an independent businessman with his take on a lot of things going on in the business world and his small business. Now, there's been a lot going on in Egypt, obviously, and my sort of intro song, Taking It to the Streets, really sort of signifies what's going on over there in Egypt. I was glad to see that Mubarak went. However, I also feared who would be taking his place is the Suleiman guy that he appointed as vice president. I don't know if he's still part of this clique, but he's a CIA agent, a torturer. So the U.S. federal government has been paying them billions for the last 30 years in foreign aid and to make nice with Israel, paying each country billions every year. And now they're pissing and moaning and whining about cutting off foreign aid. Well, you know, that's not constitutional to begin with, looting the American taxpayer and then giving it to these dictators, propping up dictators. Like Ron Paul has rightfully said, what the bottom line a lot of this is, the lower income people of rich countries are taxed to subsidize the rich people of poorer countries. And if we look at some history here about Muslim countries and all this, the neocons are wetting their pants and talk radio and Fox News about the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, I think the Muslim Brotherhood is not what the old Muslim Brotherhood used to be, and they're going to play a role. And who was the U.S.? Who are we to dictate what these other countries do? It's not our business. Again, how would we like it going on to our country? And here's a little brief little history for you. Here's a partial list of Muslim countries that have been invaded, conquered, occupied, and colonized by the Christian West, primarily Britain, France, U.S., Spain. Here's these countries that have been invaded by the West throughout the centuries. Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Sudan, Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Jordan, Iraq, the first time, Iraq again, Iran, Pakistan, East Pakistan, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Yemen, Oman, Abu Dhabi, and Dubai. So this goes back a long time. No wonder these people are pissed off. And, you know, the neocons talk radio, you talk sense to people like this, and a lot of them reject it. And at the same time, I say to them, well, please show me in the Constitution where they have the authority to not only occupy these countries, but to give them foreign aid, which, you know, only usually props up dictators. They skim that money. Very little of it hurts the people and needs the help. And those people don't really need welfare. They need investment. They need their own governments to get out of the way. Even poor countries, taxes interfere with production, with businesses. Foreign aid hurts local farmers, because if you dump all this free food in a country, well, what does that do to farm prices? So, once again, U.S. foreign policy from the federal government. I put the blame right at the feet who deserve it. The federal government, regardless of what party's in power, they've been maintaining the same foreign policy, propping up dictatorships, propping up Israel. And this pisses people off, and they've had enough of it. And these Egyptians, they're weary of it too, because they don't want the army taken over. Even I don't mind the army just overseeing things till they have some elections set up, as long as the army is not repressive and hurting people. It, you know, if it wants to keep the peace and not mess with Israel or mess with other countries, that's fine. But I'd rather see an Islamic republic, a rule by law, than a democracy, because I don't care for democracy except the right, you know, how we choose our leaders, the peaceful way which we choose our leaders, and of course the democracy of the marketplace where every penny, every dollar is a vote for things that we want to buy. So Egypt has problems. The best thing the U.S. can do is stay out of the way. If American businessmen or European businessmen, Asian businessmen, if they want to invest in Egypt, that's fine. But we don't need the CIA involved, and I'm sure they are involved. They want to use Egypt as a place to torture people, to use rendition, to take so-called suspects from other countries without a trial, take them to be tortured. These bastards who are American CIA and or military who are sworn to uphold the Constitution, which clearly prohibits torture, which clearly prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, and their flagrant, arrogant disregard for our United States Constitution, which they are sworn to uphold and defend, they readily and happily facilitate in sending people to be tortured in these other countries, including waterboarding. And as we know, it was torture when Japanese did it to American soldiers, but miraculously, if Uncle Sam does it, if the good old USA does it, well, then that's okay. Even Bush has admitted that he allowed or okayed torture. I mean, that's why he changed his plans. He didn't go to Switzerland last week because he was afraid of being arrested and hauled up on charges for being a war criminal. Rightly so. As were Cheney and Rumsfeld, they were booed over the weekend at the CPAC convention, which once again this year, Ron Paul won the straw poll. And the neocons are wetting their pants. They're upset about it. The anti-Ron Paul crowd who were booing him there, and that those idiots who were yelling USA, USA. Well, all those kooks who were yelling USA, USA, what they're really yelling, though they don't realize it, they're yelling federal government, federal government. And once again, Uncle Sam is underhandedly, the CIA, I'm sure, is involved with whoever takes over in Egypt. Even if they abrogated their past peace treaty with Israel, that's not something to worry about. There's no need for Egypt to attack Israel or bother with Israel. They should trade with Israel. They should cut off all military and torture connections. They should free up Gaza, let goods and services flow in and out of Gaza instead of building that concrete, lower concrete wall to prohibit the tunnels and the smuggling in of food, medicine, weapons. It's a shame that Egypt has been part of this, but again, they're paid by Uncle Sam. It was, over 80 million people there. I mean, what is $2 million in foreign aid to all those people? Well, and it's probably even more than 2 million, but at least half of that goes to the military over there. You've got all these older generals propped up with U.S. foreign aid, so they're defending the regime. But the younger generals and the younger officers are more opposed to this. And I read something last week. I was very proud to see that some of the just rank-and-file Egyptian soldiers and maybe some of their mid-rank officers said that if any of our generals, any of our leaders give us the order to fire on our fellow Egyptian people, we will shoot those who gave us the order. And I'm 100% with them on that. Egypt's got a lot of history. It's an important country. It's got amazing artifacts from back in the day of the pharaohs, the pyramids, all this stuff that's very interesting for tourism. And there's a lot of poverty, and Mubarak skimmed all this money, $70 billion. That's more than Bill Gates. That's more than Warren Buffett. And the problem is that money, some would say, well, just give it to the people of Egypt. Well, you know, just to give them the money, if there's no production, if there's no investment in the private sector, what good is that going to do? Because once the money runs out and the apartments are built for these extra people, what do they have? So that money should have gone towards investment. I mean, it was very misallocated. And of course, dictators, they skim a chunk for them, five for me and one for you. So very little of it hits the people. It's just a very messed up situation. It's an awful U.S. federal government foreign policy. And once again, the U.S., the federal government messes up practically everything here at home and is doing it abroad. But I state it in clear terms. I'm not going to dance around it like talk radio and Fox News. I mean, the audacity of a lot of these Fox radio people wanting Mubarak to stay in power. Well, they never had to live under a dictator. It's easy for them to say. They never had to live under that. They know where their next meal is coming from. So a lot of this poverty and malnutrition in a country like Egypt and hopelessness and despair, that stems from the U.S. propping up their dictator for 30 years, regardless of the administration, 30 years of propping this son of a bitch up and giving him all this money every year. So to me, the real criminals are the politicians in the federal government and the Congress who allow this sort of unconstitutional behavior. That's why I keep going back to the Constitution. I challenge anyone to show me in the United States Constitution where it's enumerated that the federal government is supposed to prop up dictators. So you have this legacy, you know, many decades of unconstitutional, endless free murder weapons, foreign aid to Israel, at the same time propping up dictatorships around them like the Shah and Saddam and Egypt, Algeria, certain these other countries, and, you know, of course, France and Britain are involved in this too, propping up people. So that's what happens. That's where this blowback comes from. No wonder they resent all this. And again, I'm not pro-war per se. I'm very pro-gun ownership and pro-defense. But at the same time, I think it's despicable to lie to the American people, to lead them on, to steal their money through taxes and give it to dictators overseas. It's not capitalistic. It's not free enterprise. It's not free market. It's statism. It's state capitalism. It's corporate socialism. It's fascist economics. And, you know, what do we have to show for it? Instead of encouraging trade and investment, we've encouraged dictatorship and squandering precious resources and precious capital. And, you know, people are bitching now because, well, Rand Paul wisely said he would cut off foreign aid, including Israel. I mean, who are they to be extracting money from us? All these countries are parasites on the U.S. taxpayer. We need to be free from them. We have plenty of our own problems here. And meanwhile, Asia's coming up. I mean, China's going to have problems. It's got some problems. It's holding a lot of U.S. debt, and I think there's some inflation growing in China, and it's got those pollution problems. But even so, China's cutting deals throughout the world. They're not sending troops and armies. They're going to different countries, buying their resources, doing it peacefully. I mean, they're setting a good example for Uncle Sam. It's China practically has more economic freedom today than the U.S. It's practically easier to start a business in China, as I understand it. And as I've humorously, although seriously, said before, what's it going to take in the U.S.? Is it going to take a Marxist government in the U.S. to impose a free market economy on the country? So Obama continues to go down the wrong path, and these wimpy Republicans just want to nibble at the edges, hardly cut anything. Rand Paul last week came up with a plan to cut $500 billion. Of course, it wasn't taken seriously by the entrenched politicians of both parties. You know, the Republicans most of all need their feet held to the fire. And I hope that the Tea Party members will continue to push for these cuts. Now, I don't mind cutting the entitlements, but I'm like Ron Paul. I don't want people thrown out on the street. But we got to cut this massive military foreign policy back. It's just sucking up so much money that could be used to buy out people from Social Security or to provide the lower income or the indigent vouchers, for example, to buy medical savings accounts. I care about people, don't want them thrown out in the street, and I resent those who like to twist libertarian or free market logic, saying we want to get rid of their Social Security. Well, we would phase it out, but we would see that those who are on it or who really need it would receive it. However, we would still like to, say, give a lump sum buyout, buy annuities for these folks, and of course, first of all, ask all of those citizens in the U.S. who, yes, they've paid into it, but if they really don't need the their Social Security, then they could just cut it loose, say, we don't need it, we'll just let you have it in our way of trying to solve the problem. But it's not getting any better, folks. America's resting on its laurels. Other countries are coming up. Asia's coming up especially. And for those who put down China, say they're, you know, sweatshops or people working very cheap, well, they have a different standard of living. China has to go through an industrial, its own industrial revolution and its own capitalistic growing pains. Look at the wages of South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan, for example. Their wages have come up through more investment. So it's not like China's going to remain poor. They're coming up. They have a huge population, as you know, a growing middle class. They have that tradition, that legacy of hard work, education. So I respect China and Asian people. In fact, I was always taught to respect them as a kid. Freddie, they would say to me, look how hard they work, and they study hard too. So I've always, you know, known that about Asian folks, and now I see it even on a grander scale. So investment in China is not a bad thing, and there's what we call a worldwide division of labor, where given the freedom to create and produce, each country would produce what it does best, goods and services, and free individuals throughout the world should be able to vote with their money on what they want, from who and where it comes from. And they shouldn't be taxed heavily for that. I don't mind a micro tariff. The Constitution calls for it to be funded by tariffs. They want to have a 2% tariff on foreign goods, or, you know, maybe 3%. That's fine. But none of this 47%, 56%, you know, 50% tariffs, that's ridiculous. Props up inefficient American producers and makes our fellow Americans pay higher prices, and especially hurts lower income people. So the whole thing about China is not a bad thing. It's too bad it owns a lot of our debt. And I don't know how Washington keeps borrowing money from these other countries and just increasing our debt load. I don't understand how this can continue with the Fed creating more money out of thin air, quantitative easing, which is another lie name for inflation. And I'm starting to see what I think is some inflation now. I'm seeing higher prices for gas. I've noticed it in grocery shopping. I've noticed it at Home Depot and Lowe's. So I think we're starting to see a price creep. And as Austrian economics shows, prices don't all increase together by the same percentage or at the same time. They move sort of accordingly, but they move upwards, but they don't move simultaneously and perfectly together. So that's something to be concerned about on the horizon, especially with this more creating of billions of dollars out of thin air. And China knows it, and other countries know it. That's one of the reasons that federal government had some trouble with Iraq and Iran, because I've heard that Saddam and even Iran, they didn't want to use dollars anymore because they know dollars are becoming worth less and less through time, through the creation of more of them out of thin air. And at the same time, we've got a $1 trillion overseas empire, over 700 military bases in over 130 countries. We're defending our rich allies, South Korea, Japan, Western Europe. I mean, how long is this going to go on? Meanwhile, it's sucking billions out of our private sector here. That money could be reinvested here in machinery and equipment, agriculture, many different things. But it's being sucked up by a huge military-industrial complex, which is way beyond the scope of the Constitution, and these wars, which have cost us over $1 trillion. Rumsfeld, that's SOB over the weekend, he was giving an award to Cheney. I mean, just it's sickening that those two were at the CPAC convention, and Rumsfeld was getting, I think Cheney was giving him an award for something like a defender of the freedom or American freedom or a defender of the Constitution. I mean, it's hypocritical. These two criminals are the opposite of that. They helped engineer this war along with their neocon buddies. They haven't served. They're chicken hawks. And they find no problem continuing their neocon and their Zionist, in league with Zionist plans for, a global New World Order dictatorship, as far as I see it. And they're the ones, you know, tweaking these levers of this injustice and patting themselves on the back. It was sickening. And I'm sure a lot of other people saw that. And, you know, my criticism and my anger and condemnation against them does not come from some leftist ideology, not at all. If I happen to be in agreement with anybody on the left about the war, it's just a coincidence that we happen to be, you know, where the circles cross. We're in that little same area where the circles cross, but, you know, and with little else. But the left is usually right about their anti-war, anti-imperialistic stance. It's not constitutional. It's not an American governmental system that I would respect and I would be proud of. Yet it continues no matter who's in power. And I'm sure Obama's scheduled to probably sign, coming up, the largest military budget ever, which is not a defense budget, by the way. I mean, a defense budget for the U.S. would be a lot smaller. The troops would not be overseas. We'd be defending our own borders. We could have our own missile defense system. We wouldn't push it on other countries. We wouldn't stick it in Europe. We wouldn't put it in Poland. We wouldn't be railing sabers or upsetting the Russians. It's just ridiculous to continue expanding this huge military-industrial complex, especially when we're broke. And that, too, is sucking precious investment capital out of other factories and consumer goods that we need. So, you know, I see that as a big problem. Now, I'm wondering where my special guest is tonight. I don't see that he's called yet. So I hope he has. Sometimes this program is a little difficult for people out east because it's 12 o'clock their time, where it premieres 9 o'clock on the West Coast. So sometimes that creates a bit of a problem. Anyway, I hope Congress will do some serious cutting soon. One thing I've suggested, Ron Paul suggested, many other libertarians or Ron Paul Republicans, another thing they could cut and abolish is this stupid, insane drug war, which has just made everything much worse. It's caused the problems in Mexico. You know, mankind has always sought to change their consciousness. Drugs and alcohol, it's not going to go away. It's better to not prohibit it and control it through education, rehabilitation, and prevention. All of that is better than a stupid drug war. I mean, 30, 35 years ago, I recall commercials that used to say, if you're going to do drugs, know what you're doing. And not that we're advocating drug use here on Third Stream View, but there's better ways of dealing with it than prohibition and incarceration. And that's such a joke about St. Reagan. You know, Reagan would always say, you know, government's not the solution. Government is the problem. We need less government. Sure, St. Reagan. So why did you embark on a huge, massive drug war? More incarcerations of nonviolent drug so-called offenders, more prison construction, more bureaucrats, more bureaucracy. That's Reagan's legacy. You know, they just celebrated his 100th birthday last week. Well, taxes went up under Reagan. He and that bastard Greenspan, they engineered tax hikes to withholding taxes and these other taxes. Yeah, he cut the marginal tax rates, you know, sort of early on. But then he did these little prickly things in the meantime that weren't very well publicized. But that kind of stuff was going on. And Reagan was a big spender. He pretty much tripled the deficit. So, you know, when they celebrate his 100 years, like I like to say, Reagan's talk, you know, Reagan's performance, that is, never met his talk in all his rhetoric. And yet they still, you know, glorify this guy and, you know, they idolize these politicians. Thank goodness I never, ever idolized Lincoln or Wilson, FDR, LBJ, and now Bush the second. I never idolized these guys, nor Churchill. I used to like Churchill till I really found out the lowdown on this guy. And in a nutshell, he who wanted to preserve the British Empire hastened its destruction through pushing World War I from behind the scenes. He was all for that, and World War II, which ended up bankrupting Britain and making it the lapdog of the U.S. ever since World War II, sadly enough. So I've never idolized these people that are held up as something great, these great leaders. When you really read between the lines and see what they were up to, it's not a pretty picture, especially with Lincoln. Yeah, he wanted to free the slaves and colonize them, which was to evict them from the country, to banish them to Haiti, Central America, or Africa. So Lincoln's whole thing was, here's your freedom, now get out. A lot of people don't know that. So that is the issue with Lincoln. Still waiting for my friend to call. I wonder if Mark is out there. He's got the number. We're going to talk about small business. Small business owners, what they run into with taxes and regulations and more rules and more details that governments want. Governments, they work against the economy, but they sure want to suck up all their taxes. You know, they're great at that, and of course they like to expedite wars too, because that's one thing they're good at. They hire more bureaucrats, more bureaucracies. Well, look what the Republicans did after 9/11. No one was fired, and they gave themselves a $40 billion raise. They gave us the Department of Homeland Security, a huge new invasive, unconstitutional bureaucracy. When before that, they were spending $40 billion a year on the CIA and FBI and national security. And they couldn't even defend us. They couldn't even defend their own headquarters, which is the Pentagon. And I still demand and wonder why the Pentagon has not released the footage from... They had something like almost 100 cameras in observing the Pentagon, including that gas station, the gas station across the street, which they immediately, FBI came and confiscated their videos. So, you know, what aren't they telling us? They released that one thing that looked like a quick silverish fire flash that hit the building, you know. So I'd sure like to see the footage from those other cameras, just like they had many other cameras at the Murray Building in 1995 when Timothy McVeigh supposedly blew it up. And again, he may be involved, and he might have had, supposedly they thought there was a Middle Eastern person with him in that truck. Who knows? But even if McVeigh planned this and was part of it, once again, he was facilitated in sort of another black flag sort of attack to where the country of origin, through its secretive government apparatus or military or rogue people, CIA, whatnot, FBI, they create attacks on their own country to further scare the people and make it easier to lead the sheeple. And they can further implement more government control, regulation through fear. And it worked like a charm, just like the PNAC. Those of you who know about Project for a New American Century, I think 98 they wrote this document, which I think Michael Chertoff may have been behind. I know that Rumsfeld was, Cheney. They signed off on it. I don't recall if George Bush did, but as many of you know, it called for they wanted to re-strengthen America's defenses. And they clearly said in there it would take something like another Pearl Harbor attack to galvanize American public opinion. Well, thanks to Israel's Mossad, they got their attack. Yes, the planes hit the building, but there were other bombs going off downstairs before the buildings collapsed. And of course, they like to continue to ignore World Trade Center building number 7. Talk about a perfectly controlled implosion. So that is something that they don't like to talk about. And it was not hit by planes, building number 7. So that's another thing. It was left out of the report, the 9/11 report. Excuse me, folks. Have you tried to call in yet? Any luck? Okay, try that. Yeah, those other numbers are line 2. So 413, try 530-413-4515. 413-451-530-413-4515. Bye. Got it? Bye. A little technical difficulty there, folks, but hey, when it's your show, you can kind of do what you want. And I welcome other calls, too, because I like to discuss many things with different people, and I can jump around from many things. And since I'm like a self-proclaimed free market economist, it gives me an overview on the world and human action and things as I see it. So you can apply economic logic to much that's going on. So I welcome calls, especially those who do not agree with me and who care to debate me, because that's fun to do. And unlike talk radio, I don't feel the need to cut you off, and it's more fun to leave you on and skewer you in my own way, because you haven't really experienced my razor-sharp wit, but it's there. It's there, and I've been hoping for the day when I can unleash it on talk radio, and I would love to go up against Bill Maher. I just consider all these people, talk radio, Fox News, Bill Maher, Rachel Maddow, you know, that whole crowd. I just consider them to be gatekeepers on the left and gatekeepers on the right. You know, together they put down the 9/11 truthers. You know, together they carry forth the same foreign policy, the same blind support of Israel. So a lot of that doesn't change. It's just the one government party with two heads and its corollary, one bird of prey with two wings, continues their bipartisan ripping off the American people, taxing us, regulating us, pushing us into war, trying to start other wars. So I didn't realize all this, not even 10 years ago. I didn't even realize what a charade there was. And now that the curtain's been drawn back, I really see what's going on. And of course, they like to refer to people who question authority, question the whole event of 9/11, the truthers. They like to, you know, throw words out like their conspiracy theory or anti-Semitic, racist, anti-American, the question unpatriotic, all that sort of stuff. But that just bounces off of me because I won't put up with that. I wish I could have been at that CPAC meeting as one of the guest speakers over the weekend, because I would have shaken things up and I would have directed my venom especially for the pro-war neocon wing of the Republican Party. Because as I'm fond of saying, the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party, that is the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, is where the Republican Party should be. And Ron Paul and many of the Tea Party members, even congressional members, and a lot of the Ron Paul rank and file, we see what's going on, the bankruptcy. And all this could be averted by reshifting our priorities, by bringing the troops home, closing these foreign bases, or should I say, just give them to the local countries, Britain, Germany, South Korea, Japan. All those countries should staff those bases with their own military personnel. They can continue to be our allies, but we don't need to prop them up. We don't need to be sending money over there. If Americans want to help people from outside of our country, just as they help people inside of our country, they should be free to write a check. So that would help a lot, cutting back our budget. And there's no need to be staffing all these foreign bases. Another thing I would like to see is pretty much an arms embargo, because there's plenty of weaponry out there in the world. We don't need to keep arming these people, especially because all of these defense contractors, you know, and Halliburton, that whole crowd, they are continuously feeding at the tax trough. Yeah, they might be private companies per se, but they're feeding off the tax trough. Billions, trillions. Meanwhile, people are out of work here. The infrastructure needs work. And Obama's making these promises in 10 years or by 2015. Well, you know, he might not be even in office, even if he is. And they talk about by 2030, you know, they're not even most politicians only look for the short run, but they're using this his BS to look, you know, for the long run, you know, 15, 20 years from now. How can they say that? They can't even run things correctly now. And they're making these predictions. Everything by then, you know, a lot of stuff will happen in the meantime. So, I mean, what a charlatan this guy is. And I knew this would happen. Unfortunately, Black America still is behind this guy because he's got darker skin and they think that whitey or other people are down on Obama because they're racist. But I never talk about his race when I criticize him because it's his policies. They're awful. And, you know, once again, I just see a smooth-talking lawyer who remains clueless about economics, political economy, economic history. And he would continue blindly going down the wrong path and, you know, just thinking more government spending, more government programs are just fine for everybody. He would grow the welfare state even further. And you got this fool Romney, who's the Republican front runner. You got to be kidding me. And he's been trying to backpedal and defend his idiotic Romney care, which pretty much Obama has imposed Romney care on the whole country. If I was a Republican activist or a conservative activist, I'd be ridiculing Romney, steering people away from him, pointing out he's just a big government Republican with his multi-millions. He ought to stay in the private sector and stay out of government. And if you're listening, Mitt, what kind of name is Mitt? Oh, is it for short for Mitchell? I don't know what it's short for. But anyway, your father, George, was a much better man than you, by the way. A lot of people don't know that, but he was. Romney just looks like some stuffed shirt guy with the perfect hair, a stick up his butt, and you know, a Ronald Reagan wannabe, and not very sharp about the economy or economics. He might be an okay businessman, but his economics is not good. Do I hear somebody there?
Yes, you do. This is Mark.
Hey, you made it.
I made it. Yes, I did.
Welcome to Third Stream View.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Have you been listening to some of it?
Yeah, I've been listening in, seeing how things are going.
Yeah, I've just been talking about some current events, some more history of the Middle East. I know that you happen to be a veteran.
Yes.
And whenever I talk to veterans, and whenever I'm like adamant about foreign policy and stuff like this, none of them have really ever gotten upset with me. I find that most of them agree with me, because I always tell them, like I tell you, that I respect and I appreciate, and we're always thankful for our veterans' service and bravery. But I will not mix that with foreign policy. And when I criticize foreign policy, what the federal government's up to, that is not criticizing the rank and file in the military. And a lot of them know this, and a lot of them would be saying more about it if they could, especially when they're in the service, to protect our rights.
Not everybody joins the service originally to serve their country. Most of them is to serve themselves schooling, the promise of better schooling and whatever, right. And I guess it's too late once you're in there and realize what you're really there for, you know.
That's right. I think if I was in the military today and you were, if we were serving in the same unit, I would probably proceed more in a Sergeant Bilko, Quentin McHale fashion of
yeah.
If you know where I'm coming from. Remember that show, Sergeant Bilko, Phil Silvers?
Yes, yeah, more of a Gomer Pyle-esque is what it's doing now in some ways.
Somewhat, but Gomer Pyle wasn't humor into it. But Gomer Pyle wasn't a very scamming businessman. He was just kind of clumsy. He just kind of fell into things, you know. But
yeah.
Quentin McHale and Sergeant Bilko.
McHale's Navy. It was McHale's Navy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come on, McHale. Why?
Joe Flynn. Well, I had good connections.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, speaking of connections, now I know a little bit about your history. First of all, I guess our listeners should say that you're facing the traumatic drama of becoming a half century young in the very near future. A half century.
Yes. Not one of the things you look forward to, I guess, but lucky to be here, I guess.
That's true, but
see it now.
You know, I have this consoling saying that I share with my friends that, hey, you know, the older I get, the better I was. So feel free to use that one.
Okay. Yeah. What I used to do all day now takes all day. It's more like it, I think. You know?
Yeah. Well, like that saying you hit me 2 years ago was that a bad day at music's better than a good day at work.
That's true.
No, sorry.
That's true.
Did I say that right?
Yes. A bad day in music is still better than a good day at work.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, and I agree. Yes. So I know you've been involved in music more as the sound reinforcement side, helping the bands get set up and all that, dealing with a lot of the musicians' awful attitudes or useless, and I repeat, useless egos.
Egos, right. Well, I mean, egos everywhere. It's in politics, it's in music, it's anybody that gets too much attention sometimes. You know, eventually they fall into believing it all. You're great. It doesn't take too long before people start looking inward and believing that everything that people tell them. And, you know, it's not like you cured cancer, you wrote a song, you know.
That's right. They're not going to cure cancer, they're just looking for... speaking of cancer, the cure, the money is spent, they're always searching for the cure when the bottom line is still cut, burn, or drug, you know, surgery, chemo, radiation.
Sure.
But that's another story. But anyway, you're sort of a small businessman these days. You're in the auto business as far as, I think, you might be selling some used cars, but you're also in repairing them and, you're running
repairing,
a business.
I run a salvage yard, you know, a lot of things that, you need a different licensing for, a salvage yard is, a lot of recycling, every aspect of breaking the car down into shuffled pieces and coring things out and selling stuff. And
are you guys also, does your business also do body work and painting?
Body work and paint. New legislation passed in the state where you have to get licensing for body and paint. And I've been doing it all my life without licensing, And I guess the belief is that now with this new licensing, it'll keep small businessmen like me from trying to do that again. You know what I mean? Open your own shop and try to compete.
Wow.
Because,
so, it doesn't matter what kind of experience you have, as long as you have that little piece of paper by the all-encompassing mighty state and give them extra money for it, then that makes you, somehow you're able to carry on in business because of their blessing.
Well, sure. I mean, the insurance companies they like direct repair shops, which means they steer you towards my specific million-dollar shop, and the small guy, a small businessman that also opens a body shop is out of the loop, so to speak. They cut right out of the loop because the insurance mandates that you have to take it to their specific shop, because they're going to get a guarantee. They mask it under that, but you're getting a guarantee, and they'll be able to guarantee this car for 10 years, which is, it was just bull,
Uh-huh.
A repair is a good repair, whether a small business guy does it or a big shop does it. It doesn't really matter. It's the same.
Well, a lot of the small business guys do as good or better work as like the dealer does, and at a better price?
Well, certainly. I mean, if somebody does it, I work for several dealerships when it's just a numbers game. You are trying to mass produce these vehicles out the door because the insurance regulate what you're getting paid, and because you're in with them, they regulate your pay. You're not making as much off the repair, so then you have to do more repairs in order to make the big profits to keep you at $1 million operation.
Wow. And also you've been on both sides of the fence because you've been like a regular blue collar guy working on from cars to construction to stuff, but you've also been self employed. You've been on both sides. You understand what a lot of people who punch a clock don't understand. They don't come in contact with customers. They don't understand that whole concept. And so you do. You know how to schmooze them and, like, try to steer them. And, I know where you're coming from on that. So that's a good thing because a lot of people don't have your experience on both sides.
Sure. Well, it helps to come from both sides because you're not going to tell the guys to do things a certain way if you haven't done it yourself, I guess. And not only that, I think you're dealing with customers. You have to be on both sides of the deal. You want to turn a profit, but you have to do things that show that you do a good, proper business. You know what I mean? It doesn't.
Oh, of course.
Sometimes profit isn't always first over doing good business.
Right. And now here's something a lot of the masses don't know, but I heard this years ago, is that, for example, employee-owned businesses. Let's say the employees owned Ford or Chrysler. Literally, they owned it.
Sure.
What they end up doing, and this probably won't ever cross your mind or most people's mind, is they have a knack of overpaying themselves, and they're not looking at the bottom line enough. And that's why company officers have that more in line, because if you have, all the employees running things, let's pay each other,
It'd be like Congress, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
You could just vote yourself a raise if you weren't happy with what you're making. You could actually just vote yourself a raise or vote yourself better health care. It would be great if all of us had jobs like that where we could do that,
Well, the pie is only so big. They get away with it because they're using our taxes.
Sure.
I don't know.
And now, a small businessman with the new health care program, I mean, how does that help you stay in business as a small businessman?
It doesn't.
Yeah. Adding that extra burden on the small, it's already tough to find people that want to work anymore,
I heard also they've increased the workman's comp recently. Is that true?
Sure. Workman's comp insurance is. In the Northeast here, they just come out with new regulations. You have to, if in the construction business, where you have to have a lead license. This lead licensing is another thing that it's a $500 licensing fee annually. You pay that $500 fee, but it's a $10,000 fine if you get caught without the license. Wow. And you know, I've done house repairs. If it's anything past the 1972, say the house has lead, and therefore they don't want you to do it unless you have a license. But in reality, everybody I've ever worked with has worked on these houses all these years and has gotten by just fine without this lead license. But you must admit, it does take the small guy out of the loop again.
Of course.
How many houses do you have to paint in order to, put the $500 out there? I mean, some of these places, it's not very much, but, every year there's just more and more that the people that don't want to do anything want to take the money,
Of course. I don't know how this clique got in power. It seems like these politicians and bureaucrats who've never run a business, they end up telling the ones who are business people and employees what to do. I hate that.
Sure.
Now, there's one employee.
It must be nice to base your income or your office on the fact that somebody else's misery. Have to go in and make sure you don't make money. I mean, I understand fishing regulations and stuff like that sometimes are a necessary evil in order to keep the numbers of fish and stuff that are out there. For the fishing,
right,
is very tough. But they have to deal with it to keep things going. But with us, there's just more legislation, more mandates, more regulation that makes small business. Now, I'm not a tree hugger by any shorts, but I believe that,
right,
we should have laws to protect our environment. But our laws right now are so ridiculous that it's choked out any glimmer of hope for small business,
Well, yeah, I as an economist would say that we would, in terms of especially pollution, that deals in all pollution is local, all crime is local, all poverty is local.
Sure.
But pollution, the better way to deal with that is through property rights and tort law without a massive federal government, telling states 1,000 miles away how they're supposed to do this or that. What is Washington supposedly more enlightened than the people in the states? I mean, the states created the federal government.
Sure. Every state it should handle it in their own way. It shouldn't be done as a federal mandated thing, it just seems like they get on these bandwagons and throw a bunch of money, or yours and my money, at it, actually, until it becomes a law. I mean, some of these things are great ideas, but do they need to be laws?
No.
And you wonder how many of these things should be are just financial based. I mean, seatbelt law is a great idea, and it helps a lot of people, I'm sure, but I've been on a ramp truck, most of my life, picking up people at accident scenes, and it really is not much proof that says a seatbelt saves you, in a situation. And how much income federally that has pulled off, and how much money that was spent federally through the whole seatbelt pass it as a law. It's a great idea, sure, but should it be law?
I of course oppose seatbelt laws. I oppose motorcycle helmet laws. I've always worn a seatbelt because I have a pretty face. But I would never impose it on somebody else. And at the same time, I don't want to pay their medical bills.
Exactly. But you pay a lot of medical bills for people that are in Congress. You pay a lot of medical bills for people that are on welfare. You pay a lot of medical bills for people that just don't want to go to work and do anything, PK. If you look at it that way, the percentage that you're talking about that is seatbelt, is pretty small. When you look at it in that standards,
And now these damn local governments, I don't know if they're doing it in your neck of the woods, but, more creeping cameras at intersections, which is just for their cash registers.
Sure.
Well,
they mask it under the safety, they put these things in as a great idea to mask it as this is your health and welfare for people running red lights. And in some cases, I'm sure that's true. I've seen places in southern United States that people just don't stop for them.
But it's the other extreme, when they become
every intersection, I think that's something different entirely, don't you?
Yeah, and England has thousands of cameras everywhere in the cities. I mean, it's such a it's a shame because I love it over there, but you see cameras everywhere, you know, in small towns everywhere.
Coming from the Irish, you know, residual effects from their you know their relationship with Ireland. I think that it became a necessity for a while, and now that once you get your foot through the door, it's like anything else. You put it everywhere, and now it's another profit machine.
Well, there was a federal employee who actually did something right about 2 weeks ago. I heard that this guy was a federal border agent down in the Southwest, and he remarked to one of his fellow officers that, you know, if we just end the drug war, we could get rid of a lot of this crime and violence down here. And his superiors found out, and he was fired for saying that. Can you imagine that? So I hope we'll hear more
from that. And the drug war? Because this is a war that's been very successful, is that why?
Well, he's a federal employee too. He's a border, you know, one of the border people who catches illegals, you know. But he made an enlightened statement coming from that crowd, especially about ending the stupid drug war, which is a drain on everything too.
Sure. You know? I mean, how many wars do you need going on at the same time? You know,
we have
two wars overseas, and if that's pretty expensive. And the war on drugs, it seems, has been more intense since they've had the war overseas. It seems like more heroin is in this country now than there was prior to the war than there ever has been in this country. I've never seen so many methadone clinics popping up in my whole life, which is government-funded.
You got British American troops defending the opium fields over there. You know, the CIA is heavily involved in this. They're involved in Egypt. It's amazing what the stuff they're involved in. Of course, it's all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism, but it's just a slap at the Constitution constantly.
Sure.
So I don't know if you heard our last show, but we were talking about, in closing, I've got only a couple minutes left, we were talking about jury nullification last week, which means that if you're ever on a jury duty, you can vote your conscience. So if somebody's there for not complying with, they didn't have a license for some kind of auto repair or this and that, you can just vote your conscience. You can vote not guilty or drug possession or gambling. You can just vote your conscience. And so my mind's made up. If I go then as a nonviolent person for drug possession or gambling or prostitution or tax evasion, not guilty.
I mean, what makes you believe that the prison system in this country is just full of people that shouldn't be in there?
It's terrible.
Nonviolent offenders.
It's a shame.
The selling of marijuana, which, I mean, you can buy in any street corner of the United States. I've been all over this country. You can buy marijuana anywhere in this country. And to treat that like it's a Class A, you know, drug is ridiculous. So it's listed as a hallucinogenic. I don't know anybody that's ever smoked marijuana, and I know a lot of people that have, that has ever really hallucinated off of it. So,
you're not a marijuana user, are you?
Well, I tried it once in college, but I didn't inhale.
You didn't inhale. You didn't exhale. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I didn't inhale. I mean, I don't know if that makes me a bad guy because I tried it but didn't inhale.
Well, to paraphrase Churchill, I've taken more from marijuana than marijuana has taken from me. And I would like to remind our listeners here at Third Stream View that marijuana does enhance an orgasm.
Yes, and it's great for cancer patients. It's also good for people with MS. The medical uses are abound, and it makes great butter from what I understand as well.
Well, Mr. Mark, I appreciate you calling. I got to wind down our show. I hope you'll come back again and let us know some more about the small business world and what you're up against and how the government keeps working against you while you're trying to do the best you can and look out for your family.
I hope that you don't have to come up with any permits for your new venture and that you don't have to have too many regulations on what you say. You know,
because
freedom is that what we all went in the military for was personal freedom.
That's right.
Let's not vote them all away. People want to vote their rights away. Please stop.
Okay, well, listen, I'm going to thank you again, bid you good night, and thank you for joining PK here at Third Stream View. And to my growing legion of listeners out there, see you back again next Monday evening, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, and 12 a.m. Eastern here at Third Stream View. This is your wonderful host, PK, signing out. Until next week, and happy Valentine's Day. Good night, everybody.